Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Rashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with...
Shoshana Keith-Jeskel.
We're here for a new season. We're excited for a new season. We have new topics. We have old topics revisited with new information and new approaches. We have a big old topic today to talk about, namely Agunot. We will come back to that very shortly. Shoshana, first, this happened.
Yeah, we have two actually quite relevant this happens. In the past few weeks, you guys remember Liana from a past podcast that we've discussed. She was nearly killed by her husband, and then he denied her a get once she did recover after many months in the hospital. We are pleased to say that recently he was actually found guilty of attempted murder, and he will be in jail for her assault so that she doesn't have to worry about him coming after her, God forbid, or being free and seeing him around every corner, which is unfortunately a real worry after obviously someone has been abused. So we are happy for Liana and hope that she has a wonderful rest of her life.
Amen to that. The other thing is also a case of Agunot, really for years and years and years. The last Jew of Afghanistan, whom we used to feel bad for because he was stuck in Afghanistan, actually, we discovered, willfully stayed there so that he wouldn't go to Israel. He was offered to come to Israel. He didn't want to come to Israel because the Israeli government, rabbinate, I don't know who, because this doesn't happen so often, was going to make him give his wife, the Aguna, her get. And rather than agree to do this, after really many years of her living in Israel and him staying by his own volition in Afghanistan, he was removed from Afghanistan by some philanthropist in America. He gave his wife the get.
Yeah, on condition. They said to him, we really can't rescue you. We can't be seen as rescuing a get refuser. Like, you've got to, after 23 years, you've just got to be like, you got to give it. So,
which is, the whole story is so troubling and so depressing, but indeed it worked. You know, she's got her get, and the news, the most recent news is that he left America. He came to Israel. I don't know how long he plans to stay here. The report said it wasn't clear that he will stay here. I don't really think we need him here. Not that I would have wished Afghanistan on anybody right now, but you know, he brought this on himself. He brought our own dismay on himself. We used to feel bad for him.
Yeah. At the end of the day, and we at Chochmat Nashim know that someone who has refused to get, if he turns around and he says, or she says, I'm giving it, then we wish them the best. We have to know that afterwards they're able to live a full life, and that shalom aleichem, as we say.
Amen, amen to that. Okay, so let's get to our topic. I said it's about Agunot. We have some this happens that are about Agunot. And of course, you've heard from us on this topic before because it's a big topic. This is a topic that never goes away. Sometimes, just sometimes, there's something new to say. Let's get a quick reminder about some definitions. In Jewish divorce, because of the way the Torah defines it, the husband must give the get. We're not saying it's fair, it's not fair, but it's the given that we have from the Torah, and that's not our discussion today. The point is just that without that detail, we would be having a different conversation. So, because the husband must give the get, if something happens to his ability to do so, and he is alive, the wife remains married to him. So we have classical agunot. This was described in the Gemara, the classical case where a husband goes off to war or he's traveling, let's say as a merchant, who knows what. He disappears and there's no testimony that he's dead. So now the wife is left waiting. She's an aguna. Had he returned home, they may have had no interest in divorcing, right? This is not a divorce story. It's a terrible situation where the husband has disappeared. To prevent this, to prevent the case of her being left waiting, the Gemara talks about a husband writing out the document of a get before he goes off to war, for example, and it would only kick in as valid then if he didn't come back in a set amount of time. It's a big discussion in the Gemara, but it's also not very relevant today. Classical aginut in the modern era is nearly unheard of, these cases, except perhaps in the case of medical incapacitation, possibly in the case of... prisoners of war, thank God that's not too common. If a husband cannot give a get, again, they may have had no interest in divorcing, but now, for as long as he is incapacitated, she is stuck, married to him. Thanks to modern medicine, that can be a long time. So the agunot you hear about in our day are not stuck in marriage by virtue of unfortunate, terrible circumstance as these other cases. The agunot that we talk about most often are the cases of women, sometimes men, when a woman refuses to receive a get, but more often women, whose husbands are refusing to give them a get. And the terminology is mesurav get, mesurevit get, someone who's refused the divorce, whether out of malice or manipulation or leverage which is sometimes even recommended by the lawyers, which is its own very big problem. And the woman is stuck without a get, and she cannot move on. This is a woman who wants to move on, or there'd be no get for him to be refusing to give, meaning this is a couple that is already somewhere in the midst of the divorce proceedings. For many, this is the single most confounding element of halacha in the modern era. Plenty of people have wanted to storm the castle, so to speak, and burn down these halachot, as it were. We at Chochmat Nashim have always tried a subtler approach, in part because storming the castle isn't acceptable for so many who do care about halacha. We've encouraged the signing of prenups and postnups. We've talked about it on the podcast, Shoshana, you've written about it. And that all does some good, to be sure. And then last year we watched and joined in as more dramatic steps were taken, which were the foundation to the even more dramatic movement forward in the efforts to help Agunot. And that is what we're here to talk about today. Shoshana, why don't you remind us about Free Chava and tell us what happened when you were in New York just a few weeks ago?
Thanks, Anne. So it's actually interesting because you introduced the topic by saying, you know, it's a topic and things don't change. And it's crazy. On the one hand, things don't change. And on the other hand, so much changes, right? Whether it's in Israel or it's in the diaspora, there are people working on this issue, whether they're working on, you know, who are the judges in the Beit Din? Who are those who are hearing the cases? What are the laws, in Israel at least? And in the States, there's a lot of work being done in the community and prenup. And this Free Chava movement is obviously one of those things you couldn't predict. It's like a black swan. I don't know if you ever heard this term, but a black swan is like this event that like nobody expects and it comes out of nowhere and it completely shifts everything. And so it was amazing as an activist who's done this for a while now to watch this happen and to see this awareness all of a sudden come. And I'll explain it briefly. Free Chava, a movement that Chava herself reached out to an influencer on Instagram. As we all know, firm women rule Instagram. And if you don't know that, you really, really should go see what's happening on Instagram with the religious women, Orthodox women on Instagram with 70, 80, 90, 200,000 followers. More followers, I like to say, than any Rebbe other than Rebbe Nachman of Breslov, maybe.
Chabad.
Oh, you're right, Chabad. Anyway, these women have a lot of influence. And when they wanted to use it to free their sister Chava from the man who was chaining her in marriage, they really moved mountains. So basically, just by sharing, by speaking out, by realizing, wait, Chava, she's just like me. Right? A lot of women and men in general, when you don't know someone personally who is an aguna, you think it's like this like nebuch rare bird case where like somebody's really abusive and it's not really so common and it's not really going to happen to them.
And if she had just known those red flags to begin with, she would never have married him.
Correct. Meaning this was something that could have been predictable and I would never get in that situation, or my daughters would never be in that situation, because I would see it first. I would recognize a bad guy first. I would blah, blah, blah. And everybody thinks it's a preventable thing. Okay, like nobody thinks they're going to get into a car accident, right? Because I'm a good driver.
God forbid.
But we all, thank God, put on our seatbelts and have car insurance, which kind of brings us to where we're going. So Free Chava, actually, the movement was a tidal wave, is how I kind of see it, on Instagram that brought tremendous awareness of the fact that any Jewish woman is really a potential aguna if she's getting married halachically. That's just the fact, right? Because as you said, Anne, in your introduction, Jewish marriage generally ends with a man giving his wife a get, a husband giving his wife a get. And so if you're in that situation and your husband can't or doesn't or won't, you know, you are a potential aguna, every one of us. So Free Chava kind of shifted the understanding of what an aguna is from someone nebuch out there who unfortunately fell into the situation, but maybe could have fixed it, or maybe there's two sides to every story, and maybe if she just let him see his kids, blah, 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 to really understanding that this is a problem that is a lot bigger than that, and that unfortunately occurs because, as you said, sometimes lawyers even say, hey, you want the house, you want less child support, you want to see your kids more often, or even full custody, just deny the get. And it's unfortunately used to abuse by saying, I want X, Y, and Z. And so I actually know a lot of women who gave up their rights or potential opportunities simply for the idea, God forbid, that he would refuse the get and just wanted to get out and so did that.
I think it's important to say that what you're describing, Shoshana, is a systemic issue, meaning it is inherent in the system. And it's not necessarily a problem because not everybody makes it a problem. Most people do not. Most people do get divorced. I mean, I'm not saying divorce is easy, but easily without aginut. but it's by nature of the system that this is a possibility. And that's why it's not just, oye, nebuch, oye, I should have seen the red flags. You should have seen the red flags. Let's point fingers. Let's feel pity. I'm not saying there's no reason for pity. I think there is reason for sympathy and empathy and pity also, because it's a terrible situation. But I want to note that as much as it takes a bad actor to get this going, the system allows for that to happen, is what enables it.
Correct. And you asked me, what was I doing in New York? So one of the major things that I did when I was there was I interviewed in person five current and former Argonaut and actually gathered testimony from another three or four women who couldn't make it that day. And I actually have more interviews planned.
Wait, so let's take a step back. You went to New York, you gathered testimonies. What made you think to do this? Because I think it's such a potential groundbreaking, you know, I understand it's homespun research, but still, it's just wonderful. You know, I believe in people telling their stories.
The truth is that two things made me think about it. One was watching Free Chava kind of die down. Like any passionate movement, you know, as I said, it's a wave. And, you know, Chava's still not free. She's still stuck.
But other women got their get.
Correct. So while I was going to say, so while Free Chava was a success from an activist point of view in terms of awareness, in terms of understanding, and by virtue of the fact that because Naftali Eyal Sharabani was shamed for not giving Chava a get, and so many other women were like, wait, I'm an Agunah too. I'm an Agunah too. Me too. And they started to put, and then women were mad. They were like sharing everything. And like there's, well, if you go to the hashtag Free Chava on Instagram, you can see all of these posts. There's well over 1,000 and they don't count after 1,000. So it could be 10,000. I don't know. Posts about not only Chava herself, but other women. And as far as I know from the sources that I've contacted, at least 20 women who were waiting received their gets because of the pressure that was A, mounted on Eyal and they didn't want to be him, right? A lot of guys were just scared. All of a sudden they had something to lose. That's the whole idea. They don't have anything to lose. What does it matter to them that they're refusing? She's sitting and waiting. He doesn't have anything to lose. Manora, right? So A, he had something to lose. B, all of a sudden it just put a fire in people. And that fire was like, wait a minute, my neighbor's been in Agunah for 10 years. Why doesn't she deserve this? They were protesting outside shuls, protesting outside girls' schools where the principal was the mother of a get refuser who houses her son.
Wow.
Like, there's a lot of pressure that can be wielded here if we decide to use it. And what Free Chava did, it put a face to a movement and it fired people up. Because of this pressure, at least 20 women got their gets, which just goes to prove that we have the power to make change. And I think for me, as someone who hears all the time, wow, it's terrible, but what can we do? Wow, it's horrible, but I don't see any change. For me, this was like proof positive that when the community wants change, there will be change. That's, for me, the first thing that came out of this movement.
There was no messing with halacha, right? This was just
not even
very
close.
Very clear. You don't have to say, with all due respect to those who have said it, when there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. We don't have to go that far. 20 women got their gittin. I understand that doesn't free Chava. I understand it still leaves the problem within the system that allows for this to happen. But as you say, there is so much that we as a society can do to make sure that this is not going to remain acceptable. The fact that these men could withhold gittin for this long, however long it was, and I understand for each case it could be different, I think part of the problem that we can solve beginning here is this idea that this is no longer going to be acceptable. We, as an Orthodox society, will not tolerate this anymore. And that, I think, also was part of what you were telling me about your trip to New York. Carry on. I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, there's so much to say. I could go in 18 directions right now. By the way, also in the UK, it actually affected women in the UK, ironically, because when you have this, like you said, it's not okay, it's not okay, it's not okay. So all of a sudden, people are like, hey, it's not okay. And what are you doing?
Hey, there's a man in Afghanistan staying in Afghanistan to avoid giving a get. This is a global issue. It's anywhere anybody's going to be Jewish and married and caring about halacha.
And by the way, wouldn't surprise me if the awareness around Free Chava also made that guy who lives in America, who was the philanthropist who brought him over, aware of the fact that the Jewish community was not going to be okay if they saved this get refuser.
Well done.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Okay, so you interviewed the people in New York. You had a day of taking testimony.
Right. Without going too much into it, because God willing, we will be editing these testimonies and they will be up on our site. again, as you said, Anne, before we even get to halakha. Now, yes, if someone said to me, but don't you want a systemic solution? 100%. I want the establishment to come and say, here's the solution. Even if it's after a year of not living together, the marriage is considered whatever, but whatever it is, the halakhic decision is, I want it accepted by the Jewish community so that nobody sits there and waits and nobody can use Torah as a cudgel, as an abuse. To me, it's as devastating as the suffering of women is the use of our beautiful Torah to hurt people. So each woman brought something else of an awareness, of an understanding that we can start to implement, from education to societal saying no, to signing postnups and prenups. And I figure in order to really understand where the community can best make change, we have to hear more of these stories and see where the system fails. Aside from the documenting, because people always love to ask this question, somebody asked on my Facebook the other day, how many Agunot really are there? Okay, which really drives me nuts for so many. I understand the desire to ask that question, but when I tell you that the answer is, we know that there are thousands of women being refused to get, but here's my question. How are you counting Agunot? Are you counting Agunot as someone waiting? Are you counting Agunot as only who the Beit Din ordered the husband to give the get, which does not ever happen very often? Like, how are we counting them, first of all? And second of all, let me just let you know, there's actually 5 organizations in Israel that deal with Agunot. There's a few in America, Australia, South Africa. Everywhere there's a Jewish community, there's an organization, at least one, at least, dealing with the Agunot in their community. That's how big the system is.
But it's not really a problem. I think that this is the single best response, because the statistics of the individual numbers get complicated and messy and less, I think, dramatically relevant than when you can point and say, look at all these organizations. They keep going. They have clientele. They would not be necessary if this were not a thing. Okay, I'm going to police us and bring us back to the topic, because I want to get to what happened after the testimonials. Okay. Got all these stories. Please, God, we will share them. We will publicize them in due time. And then what happened?
On Thursday evening, I spoke in Manhattan with a small group of very motivated women. The topic was how to take virtual influence and to create real life change. And the reason I word it specifically like that is because that's what we saw with Free Chava. But this has to be 2.0, right? As you said, Anne, Chava's still not free. And if we don't make a change now to make this generation the last generation that has to free our sisters, so then someone else is going to have a free Chava, and I don't want that. So how do we make that change?
Okay, and who came to this event? You said it was small.
It was a very small powwow event of motivated people. There were educators, there were lawyers, women who just want to make real change. And some influencers, Adina Flatbush Girl was there, Avital Shizik Goldschmidt was there, she's a journalist, a few other women that were there that I don't know if I'm allowed to say. And the common factor of who was there was that everyone wanted to make change. And what was really fascinating was, as we're talking about this, and someone said, she was a student actually, she said, but like, this seems so overwhelming. Like, how can we really, in this room, 15 women, really make change? And another woman said, you don't have to get to millions. You just have to get to those early adapters, people like us who want to make change, and then it exponentially hits out from there. And you get to a tipping point and you've done your work. And she said it much better than me, because she's a numbers person. And the way that she explained it, everyone in the room, you could feel the shift of energy in the room. It went from something that seemed impossible to like a door opening and showing the way through that mountain. And it was like, I'm in. What do I do? And then everyone started saying, I'm a teacher. I'm going to get this curriculum into my school. I'm going to talk about why it's so important to have this in my school, which, by the way, is vital.
The first way you make sure that get refusal is not acceptable is you teach the children, meaning get them young. And it sounds kind of warped, but it's a matter of teaching values. And the same way that we would teach little children not to hit each other, we need to teach larger children not to abuse in other ways.
As an educator, and you know the power of education and starting before the problem happens, right? As Rabbi Johnny Solomon likes to say, upstream instead of downstream. And I was talking about postnups, and someone said, wait a minute, I can sign a prenup after I'm married. I said, yeah, it's just a postnup. It's the same thing. And she's like, I would do that. And her neighbor said, I would do that. And they said, what do you need? And I said, you just need the document, 2 witnesses, and a notary. And then a woman said, my mom's a notary, and we live really close to you. And like, all of a sudden, everyone is thinking of what they can do. And it was just like, I think I started to cry because it was like exactly like on Wednesday, it was so hard and sad and difficult. And like, you just feel overwhelmed. And then you have people on Thursday who are just like, yeah, I'm going to make this change. And so I said to them, I said, if you sign this post-nup before I leave to go back to Israel, which was Sunday, I'll be there. And I got a text message the next day and they said, can you come to Cedarhurst? And I go, I don't know where it is, but I'll be there. And so I found myself on Monte Chavez, got in the car from Highland Park, New Jersey, drove the hour and a half out to Cedarhurst. God help me. That was the Van Wyck is not a place you want to be on a rainy Saturday night. But I went out to Cedarhurst and I was honored to be one of the witnesses to two couples signing their postnups. And the women from Thursday came.
It's an American legal document, this thing that you signed, so you can be a witness.
Yeah. It's a civil document that allows... Right. It's just basically it's a civil document that says that each spouse is obligated that if they are the ones refusing the divorce after a certain amount of time, depending on exactly, you know, what you fill in, that they will pay spousal support. So it's a monetary incentive against refusing the get. And the couples were so moved to be doing this for one another, you know, like to be rededicating their love and saying, I love you and I want to protect you from the worst of me. And I want to make change for the Jewish community. It was really, really moving and beautiful. And everyone, and they invited friends and neighbors to come and see. There was sushi. And
which also makes the point, right? The prenups and the postnups are not divorce documents. They are not a question on the marriage, God forbid. The goal is to make them be a norm so that if somebody is ever stuck, they have it in place, which is kind of like the original ketubah also, for that matter.
So Saturday night, we were together to start this change. We're preparing an entire video that explains this whole thing. And God willing, this will be the start of other people doing what they can to, as we said, educate, activate, and then talk about it. I think, Anne, you said to me, you're like, even just talking about it at the Shabbos table, like if people feel there's nothing to do, everybody has something they can do. Talking about the Shabbat table, asking the rabbi.
Everybody can make this unacceptable.
That's our job.
Get refusal. Leaving somebody in the lurch in this way is simply unacceptable. And that is the thing that we need to make it so widespread so that when a lawyer comes and says to a man, oh, you have leverage, you can withhold the get, the man needs to say, that might be leverage, but it's completely unacceptable.
It's actually interesting you say that, Anne, because on Wednesday, I also heard a story of a man whose wife is refusing the get. And it's been a few years and she refuses to accept it. And someone said to him, why don't you just get a Heter Meir Rabbanim? Why don't you just get 100 rabbis to sign? And he goes, it's 2021. Do you think I'm going to be married to two women? Like for him, it was, what do you mean? That's not who I am. So here's a man suffering because his wife won't accept it. And he's just as tragic as an aguna in the sense that because of his
uprightness,
because of his menschlichkeit, right? Because of his uprightness, as you say, he's like, I'm not going to marry someone else. I want a divorce like I'm supposed to get. And I think that our part in this is to pick up the baton. It really is. In any way that we can, share an article, like it, ask your friends if they're signing prenups, postnups, have a party, talk about your Shabbat table, be in touch with us. We're happy to facilitate anything. I think this is the task of our generation, is to prove to the establishment. And by the way, at a certain point, the communal actions are going to cause establishment actions. Because if we say it's not acceptable, it's not happening, we're not okay with this.
But see, what I think is so exciting here is that this is about changing in the moment. And the fact that that bigger picture may indeed, perhaps even is likely to change down the road, it's not the goal here, right? Meaning for all that there are plenty of people who want to push all the kinds of envelopes, and we have talked about that in the past as well. This is something else. This is about helping each individual in such a colossal way that the fact that then an envelope may or may not be changed, it's almost irrelevant. Of course it's relevant. But I'm saying that by focusing on the local, that changes the local. And we can hold our breath and we can wait and see what happens on the big scale. But in the meantime, how many people will not be the subject of get refusal? How many people will get their getting, but also how many people will be prevented from ever being put in this position to begin with, if we can again make it that it's just such a tremendous norm?
Absolutely. Agreed 100%. Keep following us. I have posted a few already images of all the events that I just discussed now on Facebook and Instagram. You can take a look, follow us, and look out for our videos coming up. If you yourself or someone you know would like to add testimony to our Aguna testimony, please let me know. And if you would like to have a postnap or have a conversation, also let us know on our Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. CHOCHMATNASHIM.
Can you hear us now?